Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back.
Ian Happ.
Happ drives one in the air. Left center field. It's got a chance. Grand slam. Grand slam. Ian Happ.
Outfielder for your Chicago Cubs.
This is trouble back toward the wall as Happ on the track makes the catch. Very good play by Ian Happ. That was not a routine play.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Let's go to the desert island. Pet peeves. Three pet peeves that wouldn't be on your desert island because you're already stuck on a desert island. When you go to a restaurant and there's a booth-like setting, and there's a couple, and they both sit on the same side of the booth. Like, the what in the are you doing?
That blows my mind.
I get so angry. Number two, when someone is in a public setting and they have their phone on speakerphone.
Oh.
It doesn't even actually have to be on speakerphone if they're just loud talking a phone call. But when someone loud talks a phone call or puts it on speakerphone, they have some feel. Just put the phone up to your ear, talk quietly, go into a separate space. I hate it. Number three, deplaning when somebody gets up on the plane
yes.
that has a seat farther back than you and they run their ass up to try to be the first off the plane. Hey, you chose the seat if it's Southwest, you paid for it if it's not. Just deplane the right way. Don't be a psychopath.
Ian Happ, every Thursday on the Dan Bernstein Show on 670 The Score.
Welcome back.
It was the airing of grievances in part in episode 12 of the Compound Podcast, but those compared to some that were expressed were relatively normal, reasonable, and understandable. Ian Happ is on Twitter at IanHapp_1. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are things, Ian?
Going well. Those were some pretty good pet peeves. I was getting a little fired up there, a little passionate. Those things really get to me.
That's good. That comes through the radio. Meanwhile, as we continue to compile the list of things on that's headlined, Dakota Mekis is a total weirdo. He is getting to like hockey goalie status with some of these. And I kid you, people wouldn't believe me. They got to listen for themselves. One of his pet peeves, the first one that he said, is when the volume setting on, say, a car radio is on an odd number instead of an even number. And I thought he's got to be doing a bit right now, but it sounds like this is actually real, that is something that does bother him.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter if it's car radio, if it's on like an Alexa or on the TV. It doesn't matter. Wherever it is, he has to change it. And like when I'm driving and he reaches over to change it from, let's say, 17 to 18, I just have given up. I'm like, whatever, go ahead. I can't deal with that.
And you guys enjoyed the golf, too. I know we talked before about the previous charity matchup, but even though it was in the rain, adverse conditions, I thought it was a really good broadcast, and I thought having the guys mic'd up talking about their shots throughout the day was really entertaining, and it seemed you guys agreed in that regard.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I think getting to watch two professional athletes who were maybe the two best quarterbacks of all time, and then you get to watch them in a different setting and see how nervous those guys actually are. And playing competitive golf is not easy. And for somebody that's done it in front of 40, you know, 50, however many thousand fans that they get at those games, some of those Super Bowl games, it's still when there's nobody watching you or just a camera crew watching you and you're playing golf, it's really nerve-wracking. So I think to see that was absolutely awesome. And I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, but the Obvious Shirts guys, they tweeted at myself and Lester, that it should be me and John versus Kerry Wood and Dempster would be a nice match.
I have that written down, actually. I have that written down, and I'm thinking about it. There's no reason for that not to happen. You could do it for your current charity.
That's what I'm saying. We could do it for charity. I think everybody in that group has a charity or a cause that they would love to play for. I know that there's a bunch of people that would jump on board in Chicago to help sponsor it and see how much money we could raise. So I would love to do it. I think getting it on TV and giving people a little bit of live entertainment would be really fun.
And what's the deal with what was sort of an offhand comment about how many different wraps you guys are making in the kitchen right now? It seems like sort of a default position where, when in doubt, just put things in some sort of wrap, wrap it up, and take bites out of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of tortillas in the compound, and the general move, it doesn't matter if it's like breakfast, or so breakfast would be like eggs and lettuce and cheese and whatever. Your lunch is going to be some sort of like hummus base. Some of the guys are lunch meat. I'm not. Mine's more of like a bean burrito wrap. And then dinner, it's like, well, whatever else you have, chicken, avocado, toss it in there, make another wrap. So everything has been put into a tortilla because we've gotten to the point where maybe all the food isn't very good, but if you put it together, it just seems okay. You lose some of the bad, you take away some of the good, and you end up right in the middle.
Yeah, I just wonder, when does a wrap become a burrito, and when does a burrito become a wrap, and where is the Venn diagram between the two?
Well, I think there's taco on one end of the spectrum and burrito on the other end, and then you have wrap somewhere in the middle there. So, like, wrap is not as full as a burrito.
Okay.
And taco is open.
Okay, we'll take that under advisement. And the important thing is that you survived the pizza incident. And I don't know who's at fault here, because what happened was the order was placed for Sunday pizza. And I assume, I don't know Phoenix pizza all that well, because I know there's Chicago transplants there and plenty of New York transplants. So I don't know if you're getting it in Tavern Cut or Deeper Dish or the regular pie slices. But it turns out that the request for extra sauce was misinterpreted as extra sausage. So you actually didn't end up with the meat-free pizza that you needed, which is really just sad for all of us.
Well, I know you wouldn't believe it, but it was Dakota's fault. And
unbelievable.
So usually we get, it's kind of a New York style pizza. It's called Grimaldi's out here. And so they make a pizza that it almost looks kind of like a margarita pizza, but that's how they do their cheese. And so we started to ask for extra sauce and extra cheese on the cheese pizza because it just a little lacking there, and it makes it a better experience. So Dakota gets on the phone, says extra sauce and extra cheese. And they think he said extra sausage. So we get there. We get there 5 minutes early, and Dakota walks in, and he calls me and says, "Hey, it's not going to be ready until exactly when they said." So I'm sitting out in the car. 5 minutes goes by. He comes walking out with no pizzas. I'm like, "Oh God, what happened?" So he says, tells me what happened, and they take another 10 minutes to make us two extra pizzas. That were the cheese pizzas, and they let us take the sausage home as well. So we went from wanting to have three pizzas and ending up with five. So we had a lot of leftover pizza. So it ended up working out okay. But of course, Dakota was at fault.
Well, that wouldn't surprise. I've told this story before. When I was with my family in Paris, we were getting out. We wanted to just stop into a cafe and grab some water and a quick bite before we started our day. And we get there, and I realized that I had left my windbreaker back at the apartment. So I said, "All right, you order." So my wife just trying out French, and she ordered what she thought was four flat waters, or a quatre au plat. And I get back, and I leave, and I come back, and 5 minutes later, I get back to the table, and she's sitting there with the two kids, and the table is covered in two dozen fried eggs. And I said,
"That is fantastic."
I said, "What the hell is going on here? What did you do?" And she's just like, "I screwed up." And in her French was, instead of saying quatre au plat, or four waters flat, it was interpreted as quatre au plat, or four plates of eggs.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, so we end up, and I have to tell you, honestly, the best eggs I've ever had in my life. Absolutely, these French farm eggs. I seriously must have sucked down 8 eggs on my own just for the breakfast. Now, we're eating these damn things. If we're paying for them, we're eating them, and we're not going to be jerky Americans and make a scene out of it. So shut up and everybody eat your eggs. And it was phenomenal. But that's the kind of thing you never live down if you screw up something like that.
Yeah, that worked out perfectly. That's why whenever I'm trying to speak another language, I just do a lot of pointing. A lot of pointing. Look at that. Whatever that is, give me that.
Yeah, I look at what people are eating, and I was just mentioning it like the previous segment. We were talking about how you always know what to order, and if you see a lot of people enjoying it, it's probably for a reason. So just point at it and say one of those, and I agree. If you're uncertain, it's generally the right idea. Yeah. Now, as we saw Max Scherzer's statement hit last night, I applauded it. I thought that was a phenomenal way of somebody on that executive negotiating committee to basically tell baseball, we're not talking about compensation right now. We have an agreement on that. So what's next? What else do you have? And it seems to me like, and I'm going to remain optimistic, that this is now the beginning. That this is the beginning of substantive negotiations. Now that you guys have had this sort of public standoff, that I think this is as solid a response as could be expected from your side. What do you think?
Yeah, I think as much as we don't want this to play out in the media, and I think, like I said last week, the best thing for us to do is to send proposals back and forth and announce it when it's done. But it's positive. Any traction on the two sides sending proposals back and forth is positive. And I think that's what the fans should take from this, is that there's conversations happening and we're getting closer to a deal. No matter how far off we are on these proposals from either side, sending them back and forth is getting us closer to a deal. So I think there's nothing but positives coming out of the two sides talking.
How much conversation is going on that's getting to the rank and file at this point, or is it still trust in the reps and in the executive reps? What's the depth of penetration of the communication? Because what we were hearing early on is, because of the timing of this, more players are more aware and engaged and informed than have been in previous types of collective bargaining, just because of what's been going on in off seasons relative to what's happening now.
Yeah, everybody's been really involved. I know that our team's been talking to each other quite a bit, and that's all you can ask for. I think the PA, we do a great job at making sure that you get the opinion of every single person that the PA represents. And that's how we work as a union. As a rep, you go back and you talk to your teams, and you make sure that you're representing the best of what we have to offer, and then take it back to the top, and that's how the decisions are made. So I think the communication has been fantastic, and that's something that we'll continue to strive for, is just making sure that every single person is heard and that we work collectively as a group.
Yeah, I as we mentioned before, I feel for the minor leaguers, because we just have been hearing how different ownerships are taking different approaches to how they're going to be paying some of these guys and how long some of these stipends are going to be available. It does look like one way or another there's going to be a restructuring of the minor leagues and of how these draft picks make their way towards the majors, the number of affiliated teams, maybe opportunities for more independent leagues. As it shakes out, what are people talking about behind the scenes about? And it's very easy to concentrate on the majors, but the business of baseball does rely on development and the feeder system, which you've experienced now. What do you think would be the right way to do it fairly, to make sure that if baseball is streamlining its business in some way, that it doesn't keep the best players from getting opportunities at jobs?
Yeah, I think that it's a very difficult question as far as the minor league structure. And any time that people in our industry are losing jobs, it's not fun. And I know that it's not just players. There's a lot of coaches and staff that make their living that way, that are coaches in some of the lower level systems that they're talking about eliminating. So that part of it, absolutely hate to see. The other side of it is that there are a few different facilities in different cities across the country that are not fit for minor league baseball. You play in places where the field is terrible. There's no hot water in the showers. The locker room is not big enough to accommodate what teams are bringing now. So I think that that'll be a positive outcome if they do decide to shake down the minor league system a little bit, is you'll have better facilities for the players in the minor leagues. And I think that that would be the one positive outcome here. But as far as the actual structure and what the minor leagues are going to look like moving forward, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the plan is. And unfortunately, the MLB PA does not represent minor league players. So it's not something that we're privy to. It's a discussion and negotiation between MLB and minor league baseball directly.
Are you guys getting stir crazy at all? As much fun as you're having down there, and as much as you're staying in shape and you have activities. I know you're playing golf and playing tennis, but are you getting at all tired of each other?
I think this last week we kind of hit a wall where we were like, you know what, the compound's great. We're having a bunch of fun, but yeah, the say you walk in the kitchen, you look at the same food again. You kind of have the same three or four activities that you do all the time. And I think that part of it definitely will drive you a little stir crazy, combined with the fact that Arizona has moved to no temperature under 100 degrees for the foreseeable future. So that's a tough combination for making you want to go outside and do a bunch of stuff. But we're happy to be where we are. Arizona has really eased up on a lot of things. So Arizona is a place that is feeling more and more like normal. And I think we're very fortunate for that.
I want to get back to the golf for a second, because I know you're it's always fun to talk about golf with you because of how often you play, you know, your connection to the game growing up, and what it's meant to you. When I started hearing the way Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods were talking about their shots, particularly Mickelson, it just gave me an appreciation for a level of skill, a specificity to which they think about the game that is just remarkable to me. And I know we've heard it before. Broadcasters talk about it all the time. It's different when a broadcaster is talking about it than when you hear a player in the moment kind of feeling his way through it. And even especially in those conditions, you know, I've never thought Phil in interviews is kind of a bland guy. He's got a little bit more interesting as he's gotten older and offered a bit more of himself. But when you play, and you're obviously a low single-digit handicap, I think, would you say you're a two or a three? Are you at a level in golf where you are in baseball with how specifically you can think about the shape of a shot, the trajectory of a shot, and looking at a putt, the grain of the grass on the green and things like that? Because I loved hearing all those details.
Yeah, I think I'm in between where your average golfer is and where these guys are. The most impressive part to me is what they can do around the greens, their short game. I don't have the control of my golf ball that they do around the greens. I thought the one shot that Phil hit where he said, "I'm going to run this up, it's going to bump, it's going to jump two times and stop right next to the hole." I don't have that ability. If I do, I will imagine that shot in my head. If I pull it off, you know, one every five or one every 10 times, I'm saying, wow, that was pretty good. But I'll surprise myself a little bit, but my iron play is pretty strong. You know, I'm pretty strong off the tee. So, I am able to work it and kind of see the shot before I hit it in that sense. And then I think with the putting, the reading of the grain, when I moved to Texas, and I spent my off seasons there, there's a lot of grain down in Texas on the Bermuda green. So I've learned a lot about reading, the different grain and which way it moves and how it's going to affect your putt and chipping into the grain and against it. Yeah, those are really fun conversations to have. I grew up in the north, you know, grass very similar to what guys plant in Chicago, and it's just lush and green, and you don't really have to worry about any of that stuff. And the bent grass greens are just absolutely perfect. But in when you start playing in the south or, you know, Florida or Texas, you experience that, and it's a completely different world. Completely different world, and it's fun. It's really fun to learn all those different things and kind of, you know, I've been fortunate enough to play golf all over the country and get to experience that.
When I played in Tucson, I couldn't read a putt. And not that I'm any good to begin with, but the mountain golf, playing some of these mountain courses where you take into effect the that I what my dad told me, he says everything comes off the mountain. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, well, that, so read this button, tell me what you see. And I said, well, here's what I see. And he says, well, that's not what's going to happen. Watch. And I couldn't adjust to the understanding of the different sort of gravitational vectors that were going in mountain golf. It was just unbelievably frustrating to me.
Yeah, that's how it is in Scottsdale, too, but everything breaks towards the valley. So in Scottsdale, you play all these different courses, and the valley, wherever it is, that's where your putt's going to go. So you read your break, and then you take into account where the valley is, and it completely changes the putt. And it took me a couple years to really kind of figure that one out. But you'll hit a putt that's a little bit downhill and then down valley, and the thing is flying away from you. You can't stop it. And then you'll hit a putt kind of away from the valley, uphill, and you have to hit it as hard as you possibly can to get it to the hole. So that that's always been a concept that makes absolutely no sense to me, because you feel like the green is pitched directly at you. It's going to be uphill, but, oh, you're down valley, so you don't have to hit it that hard. I've never understood that one either.
So I think this works. I think Ian Happ and John Lester against Kerry Wood and Ryan Dempster. And for you, it could benefit your family foundation and or quarantine coffee at the moment, with $3 from every bag sold going to directly to COVID-19 relief charities. I wonder if you could. We could do this. We could do it some nice course here. Maybe get like Butler National, the Merritt Club or something, or Medina, or, you know, we could get a Cog Hill and really set this up for something.
Yeah, I think Rich Harvest Farms is on board to do it. They have a great relationship out there. They're actually going to be a partner with me to auction off around with Five Iron Golf downtown Chicago to play around with me and you know, bring three guys out and go play around at Rich Harvest with me. We're going to auction that off in a week or two for some COVID charities. So I think they were open to doing it, and there's definitely some partners in the city that would love to sponsor it and be a part of it. So I think it would be absolutely awesome. It would be great to kind of give people that inside look at what a round of golf looks like between the four of us.
Awesome. Let's get on it. And is there any news coming out of Quarantine Coffee?
It's been great. It's been great. The most recent news is we've partnered with Feeding America and the Chicago Food Bank. So that's going to be half of the donation of the $3 per bag, and that's going to provide 4.5 meals for every bag of coffee you buy. So we're so excited about that partnership. They've been a great partner. We're excited to support them and the work that they're doing and making sure people and children are getting fed during this time. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't know where their next meal is coming from. So for us to be able to provide 4.5 meals for every bag of Quarantine Coffee sold, it's so incredible. It's so impressive. And we just appreciate the support that everyone who's going out buying coffee and helping us on this mission of COVID relief.
Outstanding stuff. Ian, continued good health, and here's to negotiations picking up steam and baseball back in the near future.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
That is Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs, our weekly guest. You can listen to their podcast from The Compound. It is The Compound Podcast. It's an easy listen. It's a half hour. Gets me through cardio exercise every Wednesday, and it's good stuff because they're fun. And Dakota Mekas, you got to get to know him because he is beyond weird, man. He is definitely a thing. We're going to play Who Am I? Because there's somebody who's in the news for an interesting reason, and we haven't done this in a while, so I thought...
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.